This episode of Recovery Rocks is sponsored by SoberLink. And Lisa and I know that it's not just recovery that rocks, but waking up clear-headed rocks, remembering what you did the night before rocks, and so does establishing healthy relationships and accountability with the people that you love.
And we know that can be hard. SoberLink's remote alcohol monitoring system is designed to help you reclaim stability in your life and sustain a sober lifestyle. It's trusted by thousands of treatment professionals nationwide.
Click the link in our show notes to learn more about SoberLink and get $50 off your device. Shout out to SoberLink.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Lisa, and I'm here, as always, with my BFF.
Hello, my love. It is Tawny. I love you. I miss you.
I love you, too. I miss you, too. Serious. And we are joined today by our very good friend, dear friend, Dawn Nickel, who I am sure many of you know and many of you follow. She is, of course, a founder of She Recovers Foundation. I know I talk about, and Tawny talks, but we both talk about She Recovers a lot on this podcast. So I'm sure you've heard us on that. But I would say that She Recovers has been a groundbreaking movement internationally, and it is support for women around the globe, women and individuals who identify as women, in or seeking recovery from mental health issues, trauma, substance use, and related life challenges. What always struck me as just being so unique and so on the nose about She Recovers is that the way, you know, that recovery is presented is like, hey, we're all recovering from something. Right. And it's no judgment and it's all support and under the idea that no one should have to recover alone, you know, really does amazing things to bring people together and to forge connections. Dawn is also a certified professional recovery coach with a PhD and consulting experience related to women and healthcare policy. She's done a ton of writing on the subject. One of the big things we want to talk about today is her book that is out that we recommend to everybody to grab this. It's called She Recovers Every Day, Meditations for Women. And it's from Hazelden, publisher. And I know for me, as a woman in recovery now for 19 years, a meditation book, and I think we'll distinguish between what the meditation book gives you versus a, you know, sitting and meditating every day, which I know gets a little scary for people to talk about. A meditation book with daily meditations is a lifesaver. And so this is just very special. And I want to turn it over and welcome Dawn. Welcome to She Recovers.
Oh,
or welcome to welcome to Recovery Rocks.
She Recovery Rocks.
Hi, Lisa. She Recovery Rocks today.
Right? We've got all the recovery happening. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Tawny. I'm so delighted to be here, truly. I just love the work that you do, and I love both of you. So this is a great way to start my morning.
Yes. Oh, and welcome. It's also worth noting that the listeners need to know you are wearing these fabulous earrings. Can you tell us where you got these earrings?
So I was at a retreat, leading a retreat here on the West Coast on Salt Spring Island. My daughter, Taryn, who's the co-founder of She Recovers, and I host retreats there every summer. And I just got home Sunday from hosting two of them. And one of the She Recovers guests, Nadine, it's one of those weird things. I've been looking for dangly earrings that I like, especially I wanted black kind of. She brought me three pair of earrings and they're my dream earrings, all three of them. They're dangly, they're filigree. One is silver, one is black. These have got kind of the turquoise copper thing happening. So I feel like I hit the lottery, and she made them. She kind of put them together. So I'm so, just delighted.
Wow,
thank you for
so
noticing
cool.
them.
Shout it's out all to about Nadine. The earrings some days.
Yes.
Yep, you betcha.
Shout out Nadine.
She'll love it. She'll love it. Yeah.
So I think maybe let's dive right in on the book if you just want to let everybody know how it came to be, how somebody would engage with it, and, you know, what's behind it, I think we'd love to hear it.
Totally. Well, for me, I've been in recovery for 36 years from substance use disorder. In the last 3 decades, I've determined that there's a lot of other things I needed to recover from, primarily childhood emotional neglect, some trauma in my childhood, sexual assault in my teen years, workaholism in my adult years, a little bit of codependency, kind of the things. But very early in my recovery, I was introduced to this idea of a daily meditation book. And for many people who are in 12-step recovery, they'll be familiar with the little book, 24 Hours a Day, which I never actually had, but I very early in my recovery was gifted Each Day a New Beginning by Karen Casey. And it's one of the first Hazelden titles. And it's about women. And it's about it's primarily about alcoholism and women and recovery and in 12-step recovery. And so I've always had that book. When I hit the wall with workaholism back in 2011, my daughters gifted me another, kind of my second daily meditation book that I live by now. And it was called Meditations for Women Who Do Too Much. Beautiful book. And
you need that.
It's incredible.
It's a great
book. Been by my side for the last 11 years. And so I always really loved this idea, but I actually did not set out to write a daily meditation book. I was writing a book about kind of my philosophy, my theories, my practices around recovery. And what I'm always trying to do when I speak, when I write, when I share with people, women in particular, about recovery is just kind of merge this, try to break down the polarity between how we do recovery. You know, we talk so much about 12 steps. Are they good? Are they bad? And, you know, other pathways, are they better? And truly, you know, what we believe at the She Recovers Foundation is that we have to be supported to find and follow individualized pathways and patchworks of recovery. So for me, that means my patchwork is I did a hell of a lot of 12 step in the first 10 or 15 years, maybe even 20. I've done a lot of therapy. You know, I've done the meditation and the yoga and so many different things. Now I'm just at a place in my life where I feel like I've studied a lot. I work in the field and I'm able to kind of sit back and go, okay, how can we have the best of all worlds so that recovery truly is more available psychologically to more women? I know a lot of women in early recovery will hear from other women saying, oh, 12 step is terrible, horrible. Don't go there. It's a cult. It's all these other things. And they won't check it out. And you know what? It might not be for them. But I think we have to offer people the opportunity to check these things out for themselves and make their own decisions. And, you know, on the other side, people, women included in 12-step recovery, will tell people you have to go. It's the only place to go. And I mean, that's such a disservice too. So my kind of conversation always is always about talking about all the different ways we recover, all the different things we recover from, and all my thoughts kind of on those topics and everything in between. So what happened for my book, it was a little unusual, was I wanted to write that book. I did the proposal and the publisher came back and said, yes, we want that book at some point. But right now our need is for a new daily meditation book. Karen Casey's book was turning 40 this year. And they wanted something that was more inclusive. So more about not just alcohol, not just about 12-step recovery, really about all the things that I talk about all of the time. So I thought about it and I said, well, I probably have 365 ideas about recovery that I could write a short 200 word piece about. So yeah, that I'm a little bit intrigued by that. And then the publisher said, well, it's actually 366 because of leap year. We have to have a leap year. And I went, well, nonetheless, I could probably do that too. And it was just a really wonderful process. You know, my process of writing this book was so straightforward. I had a spreadsheet because who doesn't love a good spreadsheet? And I literally went in and I kind of started just plunking in all the topics that came to mind. So, I'd put vulnerability would be something that I was really excited to write about, or sex, or and all of these different things. And then I just went back to all of my other books. I would argue I might have the largest library of women's recovery books of anyone I know, because I get sent so many by publishers to review and to look at. And I buy every single thing I ever see. So I just kind of went through books and just picked like a couple of topics from this one and ended up with 366, like really, really quickly. And then I set out to write, you know, I would give myself I'd say, okay, this today or tomorrow or by Thursday, I have to have 10 first drafts done. And I wrote this book and had it submitted for public, I think, so the actual writing process. I kind of worked on the spreadsheet for a while. The writing process was 6 months, part-time. I mean, I work as a consultant. I run She Recovers in many ways. And so it was really part-time. But just like everything in my life, I wasn't a daily writer. I was a binge writer. And so I binge wrote this book. I love that term so much. Yeah. And it's what works for me, right? I mean, I get into it and like I can't get out of it. Very much like my substance use. And so I ended up, you know, sometimes I'd do 30 in a weekend and I'd be, oh, gosh, that feels good. And so here it was, came along February 21st, 2023. I'm excited. I've already paid back 70% of my advance for those of you who have been writing books.
Yes. In the first
awesome.
4.5 months.
That's huge. And I'm looking for yeah. listeners that are not familiar with the publishing process. Very few authors do what Dawn just did. So
that's
I just
right.
wanted to yeah. give some yeah. context. That means the book is doing very well, but that very also means well. You should yeah. still buy a copy. Yeah.
That means it's great. Yes. Go buy a copy.
I really wanted to do it all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Go buy, yeah, a copy, buy a copy for you and your friend.
Yeah. It's very giftable. It's very I was small just and cute say it's and would make a wonderful gift. Christmas gift. Yeah. And 20% of the proceeds do go to the She Recovers Foundation, our nonprofit. So that's my book. And I love seeing people will kind of post a picture of one of the pages and say, this resonated for me today. Or, we have people who are hosting our daily meetings using it as kind of to prompt discussion and topics on the meeting. So I really love it. It's, well, you know, Lisa, and you know, Tawny, and we'll know very soon. It's your baby, right? It's like,
yes,
you put so much of yourself into it. And it's such a delight to be able to be so proud of something and know that it's making a little bit of a difference out there in the world.
I mean, that's why I wrote my book, is like I wanted to give the resources that I needed, you know, when I was newly sober. And I love that your book is 366, you know, they're digestible. You can skim it. You can flip and just land on a page and read that. And that's like going to get you through the day. And it's a very approachable book.
Thank you. You can also use an index, which I didn't even know existed until I had it. You know, I'd have the copies in my hand for about a week, cause I didn't prepare the index. So I didn't think there was one, but if you're looking for something on grief, or if you're looking for something on trust, you can go to the back of the book and
that's
find
great.
It. Yeah.
And
it's just another tool.
It's an amazing tool that we talk all the time about, having our sobriety toolkit and the tools that we have. This is one of, you know, a lot of them are ways of thinking or changing. I mean, this is a tangible thing too. It is the kind of thing, the meditation book that Dawn was mentioning before, Every Day, a New Beginning, the women's meditations with my only AA sponsor, gave it to me early, and I had a copy in my travel bag because I used to travel a lot. So I would have it when I had to travel and things felt a little sticky. I could just pull up a meditation. Didn't have to be that day's meditation. I could just, you know, open it to whatever. And I also kept one in my office because, you know, we talk about this a lot, like how do you, we've done episodes about being at work and being, when you're sober at work, you know, there's a lot of non-sober behavior going on, whether it's actually drinking related or behavioral. And sometimes I would need a go in my office, shut the door, 5 minute timeout, read a meditation and reset. It's a great tool for resetting, which is why it's so good for your toolkit. To just have it handy. The other thing I wanted to say too was that I hope we can talk a little bit about what you were saying, because so much of She Recovers, which I first discovered when my book was coming out, so 2016, and I remember being at the She Recovers, I guess it was in 17, right? The one in, was it 16 or 17 in New York, the giant conference?
17, yeah.
17. May 17. So it was a year after, right? And, but I had already been connected with Dawn and connected with She Recovers. And it was the first time for me, having, you know, been in 12-step my entire recovery, because that's really all I knew back from 2004, was that, wow, I could still maintain my own, like, I'm a 12-step person. This is how I do it. Because for me personally, the steps have brought me enormous relief, and I like to live in the steps. But I also, it was so clear to me that other people who weren't 12-step had valuable things to add that I can incorporate into my recovery, and that there were elements of 12-step that, you know, we say in meetings all the time, you know, take what you need and leave the rest. But a lot of people, because of what Dawn says, they get scared off early. They're never exposed to what it actually is. So they don't see those little pieces that they might want to pluck off. And I always thought that term that you use, a patchwork of recovery, is just exactly the thing. It is not one size fits all. And I feel like through She Recovers, the work you have done has really opened the door to so many people who, you know, didn't feel like they fit in one way or another, or didn't know what they wanted and just wanted to check it out and just wanted to connect.
Yeah, I think that's certainly what we've seen and witnessed is, you know, it's, I would say, like, we're recovering from all the things. We do it all the ways, and we're at different stages along the way of whatever it is and however we're doing it. What I know about a lot of the women that I've met through She Recovers is they find a home in our community because they are what Jolene Parks would have called, or calls, early exiters, right? Yes. They're people who are, and one of our intentions and guiding principle is about, we believe in early intervention. We don't have to hit rock bottom to pursue recovery in any area of our lives. And so there are a lot of women who are, it's early intervention for them. I had very hard bottoms. I mean, there was no doubt about me. I was not a person like, you could not, even if they had said to me back in 1987, you should listen to podcasts and go to a yoga class for your recovery, I would not have survived that. I needed treatment and I needed 12-step recovery because I really needed to be, and I needed to go to a place where they told me, you know, the cycle here is jails, institutions, and death, because that was what was happening for me. But there are so many other individuals, and especially in our community, who are like, they haven't hit a bottom. They're quite frankly, they're not anywhere near hitting their bottom, but they're starting to question their substance use, primarily alcohol use, and they want to make a change because they know where it's going. They do see that it's progressing, and they don't want to progress any further. I tell this story all the time. A million times I've told it, but I remember meeting a woman early in kind of when we were starting She Recovers, who said she realized it was time to stop drinking because one night she blacked out and she knew that was as far as she wanted to go, and she'd stopped drinking. And I was just like, I drank. The first time I drank, I blacked out. And yeah, every single time after for 10 years, it never occurred to me that that was a problem. And so it's just those types of things, right? Or people are like, I'm drinking during the day and nobody knows and it's a secret. I'm like, no, nothing about my use or drinking was ever a secret. I think if you're able to keep your drinking and use a secret, you're a different level on the spectrum than I was, for sure. And good for you for saying, I don't need to, you know, again, in 12-step language, right? I don't need to drive the truck all the way to the dump. I can get off here.
Yeah.
That was me. I mean, I didn't hit rock bottom when I decided to stop drinking. I knew that my alcohol abuse was getting in the way of my writing career. And that was my catalyst, you know? But you could also argue that I was living in a rock bottom. I was a bartender. I was driving drunk. I lived a very reckless life. I lived in a bottom.
Dangerous.
But yeah. I lived a very dangerous life, and but it's, you know, the moment I decided to stop drinking, it was only after a couple beers. So it just depends.
Your bottom is where you stop digging.
Where you stop digging.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I love that we've created a place for people and other people who, you know, they come to us because they're questioning their alcohol use or their marijuana use or whatever, and they get in our community and they hear us talking about how our substances are more the solution than our problem in many ways, right? We depend on them to kind of deal with the hurt or the holes that we're not able to deal with elsewhere. And then they start thinking, oh, well, what is it really that's propelling me in this direction? Is it trauma? Then I'm going to take the guidance of the people around me and I'm going to seek trauma therapy. and they can resolve some of the things that were driving them to doing, like to misusing substances. And I think I see most people decide not to go back to substances once they've kind of gotten into that healing mode. Because once you're healing in that direction, going back to substances is like a step backwards. But also they might find that, yeah, the substances were not really as big an issue as they had anticipated finding out about.
And I think it's so, I think it, what you just said is huge. And people don't realize that substance abuse, alcohol abuse, whatever, it's very rarely the problem. Like you said, it's a symptom of a much larger problem. And that's how it was for me. And I know for Lisa too, it's, you know, once I quit drinking, then I got my anxiety diagnosis. I got my PTSD diagnosis. I addressed my body dysmorphia. Like all of these reasons that I drank, I've definitely not healed them. I'm still working through them, but it's very interesting. Like you said, I no longer feel that impulse to self-medicate because I am properly medicating. I'm in therapy. I'm on anxiety medication. I'm working on my shit. And the thought of drinking just doesn't really make any sense at this point. I'm just like, the reason I drank is no longer a thing. So it's like, what am I missing? And I don't really think I am missing anything.
Yeah. No, Norm, definitely not. I'm very fortunate. I'm one of those people that I went to treatment, I came out, and it's ridiculous to say this, I've never had a craving to drink ever again. I was that done. I was done for years before I went to treatment. I just couldn't stop without going to treatment. So I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, and it's wonderful. I love hearing people's stories and seeing the differences, because we're all so different and yet there's such commonality.
Yes. Yes. And I think hearing the conversation this way is part of it. It helps to remove the fear, because a lot of what I feared was stopping. And then what happens? How am I going to deal with my job? How am I going to deal with, you know, these other things? And knowing that there was something, just not being able to imagine a life on the other side, but knowing, you know, really that you can take that choice at any point in your journey and say, this isn't really serving me anymore. I want to get off. But, you know, what you can find then, and I think what we have all found, is the way to orchestrate our lives so that there's no need, you know, to lean on it in the same way. And, you know, I, like Tawny said, I do the same thing. Like if I had diabetes, I have a brain chemistry issue with my major depressive disorder and anxiety, go to the doctor who deals with that, take the medication as prescribed, and make the lifestyle adjustments, you know, that I need to make to keep myself in check.
And I think for most of us, I know probably Lisa for you, because I know you, and Tawny, I know you enough to know this, that when we kind of put aside the coping mechanisms that aren't working for us, whether it's alcohol or smoking pot or love addiction or whatever those things are, it doesn't mean that it's smooth sailing, because inevitably we'll find other unhealthy coping ways of coping, right? I mean, we find the healthier ways of coping, but also those, you know, those weird kind of things pop up. I did not expect to become a workaholic 20 years into my recovery. And yet that is exactly what happened. And that now is what I still work the hardest at, is not kind of descending into workaholism. And it's really hard.
Can you talk about that a little? Can you talk about that a little? Because I do think a lot of our listeners, and I know I've grappled with it myself, but I think it's under discussed in our realm. And so maybe if you could describe what that.
Sure. I didn't know that's what was happening. But when I got into recovery and I was just moving right along, I went back to university. I ended up going to university for 13 years. And I think as a student, as a grad student with a family, I was busy. I mean, life was full. I was juggling a family and a marriage and grad school. And when I stopped grad school, I felt a number of things. I felt a sense of accomplishment at having a PhD, of course, but I also felt like I was really behind in my life, because as it turned out, I mean, I was 27 when I went to treatment. I was 45 when I finished my PhD. I had actually, from the time I was 45 to 46, I had cancer. So I'd lost a year doing chemotherapy. So in and about 2006, I just started going really fast, thinking I need to make up for all this time I've missed, all the earning potential that I've missed. I got to go, go, go. And I took on a full-time job in government. I was consulting on the side. I was teaching at the university. And I just became wired to work. I mean, I became wired to working 12, 14, 16-hour days. And I told myself I loved it. I told myself it was important. I told myself it was just for a short period of time while I got back on my feet financially. I told myself all the lies that I would have said if I was using substances. And then I just got completely wired to it. And I hit a wall. I hit a bottom. I ended up really, really sick mentally and physically. And I had to look at what I was doing to myself. And I had to kind of go back and realize that I just hadn't done all the work. One of the things that had happened a few years previous, like 4 or 5 years previous to me ramping up, was my mom had passed away and I'd never dealt with the grief. There were some things from my childhood I'd never. So I just think that as I got kind of deeper into my recovery, and I was going deeper into the things that I really needed to heal, I just found other ways of not going there. And that's what happened with my workaholism. So I had to start over. Yeah. Back to therapy, back to yoga, back to writing, back to journaling, back to really, you know, working a 12-step recovery program around workaholism, Workaholics Anonymous, and just kind of delve back into it.
Thank you, Lisa, for asking Dawn to go into that, because I think it really is valuable to hear other people that, you know, we do develop these, I don't know, secondary addictions. Is that the term?
Transfer addiction.
That's super relatable. Transfer addiction. Thank you. It's so relatable. And I find that I dive deeper into work or other outlets during high stress times. Like right now, I'm very, very stressed about book stuff. So my body dysmorphia is kicking up. And it's just, it's very interesting to see, and I'm very aware of it. So I'm talking about it in therapy and talking to my partner about it. But I don't, like you said, if I never quit drinking, I would have never addressed all of these underlying issues, the sex and love addiction, the body image issues, all of this other stuff, work addiction, tying my self-worth to accomplishments. And social media is a whole other thing of, you know, tying my self-worth to social media, how certain posts and videos perform. That also gets me into a really dangerous territory. And
yes,
you know, and in my line of work, a big common question that I get is like, how do I date someone who still drinks, you know? And, or I hear like, God, I wish my partner could just stop drinking and everything would be better. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I have to say, we have this conversation. It's like, once your partner stops drinking, if he does, you guys will have to address what was actually causing him to self-medicate with alcohol. And they don't usually like that answer. They think that once you cut alcohol out, everything gets better. And like we're all saying, it often gets more difficult at first because you have to address all these feelings that you've numbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Feeling the feels. So Dawn, we need to discuss the very specific and wonderful joy that is a She Recovers conference where everybody gets together. And we want our listeners to know all about the one that's going to be happening soon in Chicago. Right. So maybe explain a little bit about what the retreat is, the backgrounds, and why they're so special.
Well, She Recovers started out as a Facebook page and a retreat program. And Taryn and I started hosting retreats for 20 or 30 people back in 2012. And now Taryn actually hosts the West Coast retreats here outside of the foundation. But the foundation is also kicking off a new retreat series in 2024 at a beautiful ranch in Marble Falls, Texas, about an hour out of Austin. So retreats have always been a really big part of She Recovers before we became a nonprofit in particular. But after a few years of that, the women that we were meeting both online and at our retreats were kind of like, well, have you ever thought about doing something bigger, like where we could have 100 people come together? It's just so powerful to have 30. What would 100 feel like? And Somehow that turned into, okay, let's go to New York City, to the Conrad in Lower Manhattan, and let's have four keynote speakers, including Glennon Doyle and Elizabeth Vargas from 2020, Gabriel Bernstein and Marianne Williamson as our keynotes. It was crazy, 500 women. Then we went on to do She Recovers in LA at the Beverly Hilton, and Cheryl Strayed and Mackenzie Phillips were our keynotes. Last year, we went to Miami after delaying it for 2 years. Like, you know, we were supposed to do it in 2020. COVID had other ideas. Last year, Ashley Judd was our keynote speaker, and she spoke just 1 week before she found her mother, that her mother had taken her own life. It was awful for her, clearly. But we sure felt her pain, having just listened to her talk about the relationship with her mom 1 week previous on stage. Nadia Boltz-Weber and Jennifer Pasteloff were our other speakers in Miami, two amazing, amazing writers and speakers. So She Recovers in Chicago is, excuse me, taking place at the end of September, September 29th to October 1st at the Palmer House Hilton in Chicago. Beautiful, beautiful hotel. And Elizabeth Gilbert is our keynote speaker, as well as Valerie Kaur, an incredible woman who is, she's a Sikh woman. She wrote a book called See No Stranger. She's done a lot of anti-racism work, including, I think, with the Obama administration. And she developed this beautiful platform called Revolutionary Love. She identifies as a woman in recovery from, I think, sexual trauma. Liz Gilbert will be talking about her own recovery from substance uses. And we're really excited. She doesn't often share that kind of fulsome story. And she's excited. She's actually said normally she just goes when she's speaking, she goes and she dips in, speaks, and gets out. But she's coming for the weekend. So she's going to be hanging out with us. We're very excited about that. The important thing to note about this conference is that it's our fourth and it's our final. So we're stopped. This is, you know, we realized this even after LA, we thought it's so much work. And then when we became a nonprofit, and we did Miami, and after losing so much money because of the pandemic and all of that, we realized that what we decided was we'll do it one more time and we'll see how it feels. And how it feels is like a glorious capstone to a wonderful experience. But we're a nonprofit and we struggle financially and it just takes way too many resources. So this will be our last conference and then we'll go back to the retreats, all of the other amazing things that we're doing. You focus more on the offerings that we have that we offer at no cost to participants. The conference is expensive. The retreats are not inexpensive, but we're looking at doing a She Recovers camp in 2025 that we hope will be a very accessible price point. So we're just kind of changing direction on a number of things. And that means this will be our last conference. And so it's going to be a great one. And we're very excited to get there. We also do a professional symposium the day before the weekend conference. And we co-host that with Hazel and Betty Ford. And this year, the concept and the topic of both the symposium and the weekend are our stories. So the conference is our stories, our strength. A lot of workshops on how to tell your story and then people sharing their stories. We're really looking forward to it, and I hope that some of your listeners can join us. It's all the information is on www.sherecovers.org.
Yeah, and we'll have all the links to that in our show notes. And thank you for sharing all of that. And it's interesting to hear, you know, like we always say, our recovery evolves because we evolve as people, and She Recovers is also evolving, and that's interesting to see. You know, like it's thank you for sharing that.
One of the things I'm excited for you to keep an eye out, Tani, is we're releasing, I think we call it our statement, although I've been pressuring our team to call it a thesis because it's not just a statement. But we've done a lot of work on a food and body neutrality statement that we're releasing into the world in the next couple of weeks. And so that's an evolution for us, right? Our evolution is to focus more on identity-based groups. Black, Indigenous women of color and LGBTQ+, and veterans and first responders and young people. So She Recovers the Next Generation is a big focus for us now. That's what we're raising money for, is to really do this early intervention idea much more fully as a foundation and as a movement. I knew when I was 17, I had problems and I didn't know there was anywhere I could go to talk about them. And I want more people. I want my granddaughter, who's 7, to know that she has a place where she can bring all of herself the wonderful parts of herself and the parts that she's struggling with, to somewhere where she can just start having these conversations and listening to young women. That's what we're looking to increase the population of young women in our community, so that they can start the journey earlier if that's what they decide to do.
I love that. It's all about inclusivity and accessibility and
accessibility.
Before we hop off, Dawn, you are on She Recovers, so we want to know,
Recovery Rocks. Is there any?
I think Lisa and I are just going to change the podcast.
We're going to get changed to She Recovers and Rocks.
Yeah, every time Dawn comes on, it's going to be a different podcast. You're on She Recovery Rocks, and is there any song that you're obsessed with right now, or any song that means something to you?
Or music that was the soundtrack to your recovery, anything like that?
Oh, I wish I'd had a heads up on this. Do you know what I really love? I just love it always. I think the one that comes most easy is Brandi Carlile, The Story.
Oh, I love it.
And I think it's just because it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. I also think the lyrics are really meaningful, but I also do really think that we are our story. Our story is like just the whole concept of story, right? Like, I mean, I had a story when I got into recovery about who I was. That's transformed completely. Now I think I have the story of who I was down pat, but the story of who I am today and who I will be tomorrow is still evolving. So I'm always fascinated with this concept of story. How it's never once upon a time, through to the end. It's all these beautiful kind of gradient changes of color and experience in between. So that's probably my number one go-to song I just feel like I need to hear a beautiful piece of music, I'll just put that on and just crank it to the absolute top. Thank you, Grey's Anatomy, for introducing me to that song.
I love that. Dawn, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you just remind our listeners the name of your book so they can grab it?
Yeah, it's She Recovers Every Day, Meditations for Women.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dawn. And
thank you, Dawn. Yeah,
thank you for joining us. And listeners, we hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.